Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. In an extraordinary week in American politics that starts with Donald Trump taking the oath of office and ends with a freewheeling, sort of unprecedented meeting between Trump and most of California's leadership discussing wildfires. We were there for all of it, reporting in Washington at the inauguration, at the Capitol One Center, talking to his supporters, walking the halls of Congress, talking with both of our senators, several of our Congress members, Trump supporters, Trump detractors, all of it. And then we came back here, spent time focused on President Trump's trip here, went out with Governor Newsom and state leadership as they signed $2.5 billion in funding. It's been every single day on the road in a different place talking about these issues. And we've put it all together in a half hour that is packed with content. Looking at the wildfire trip, looking at what's happening in the state, and then sitting down with both of our senators, Adam Schiff and Alex Padilla, also with conservative commentator Dave Rubin and Fox News host Brett Baer. Here is all of it in a special edition of The Issue Is. This week, President Trump visits California, the same week he's inaugurated as president.
So help me God.
We report from both Washington, D.C. and Southern California. Talking to some of Trump's biggest supporters and
fight back!
Detractors. We take you inside the offices of both of California's U.S. Senators, Alex Padilla and Adam Schiff. Plus, we go one-on-one with conservative commentator Dave Rubin and Fox's Brett Baer.
Broadcasting across California, you're watching The Issue Is.
President Trump tours fire damage in Pacific Palisades, getting a firsthand look at thousands of homes lost. He visits a nearby fire station for a briefing with local officials, including L.A. Mayor Karen Bass and a bipartisan congressional delegation.
There can be no golden age without the golden state. It's a great state.
We absolutely need your help. We need the federal help.
You've got it. I told you. You will have no permit problem. There will be zero delay. And as far as I'm concerned, you already have the permits.
Earlier in the day, the president suggesting it may be time for FEMA to go.
Maybe getting rid of FEMA. I think, frankly, FEMA is not good.
President also suggesting for the first time ever that federal disaster aid could be conditional on policy changes in California.
I want to see two things in Los Angeles, voter ID so that the people have a chance to vote, and I want to see the water be released and come down into Los Angeles.
Young Kim is a Republican Congress member from Orange County.
But he says he wants to condition that aid based off of voter ID in California and changes to our water system. What say you to that?
I can understand why he's saying it because, you know, state of California has a lot of problems. I'm not defending any current policies, but it's unrelated.
These are working people. These are working class people.
That was one of the most unusual meetings that I've ever been in my history.
Judy Chu represents Altadena, devastated by the Eaton fire.
I'd like to be optimistic, so that's why my ears perked up when I heard the words, California will get what it needs. I like that. That was encouraging.
But what he said was what it needs, and then he said right after that about permits. He didn't
necessarily
say
I know. I did not hear him protest about disaster aid, so I felt that that was a good thing.
Governor Gavin Newsom greeted the president on the tarmac warmly at LAX, but was not invited to the meeting at the fire station. We spoke with the governor the day before in Pasadena.
$2.5 billion effective immediately.
Newsom signing a bipartisan $2.5 billion fire relief bill. Senate President Pro Tem Mike McGuire hopes the federal government will eventually reimburse California for this money, as they have in every past federal disaster.
The city and county of L.A. contributed $20 billion in federal taxes back in 2021. That's more than all but four states in the United States of America. Mm-hmm. We do our fair share.
Our week starts in Washington with Trump's historic inauguration.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
Trump is my daddy, my hero.
We see block after block after block of Trump supporters, some showing Trump bling.
Trump likes a little bit of gold, so we thought we would wear it.
Right now, all of the Trump material is flying off the shelves, and shirts like My Body, My Choice, and Resist, no one seems to be buying.
Fight back!
There's a relatively small gathering of anti-Trump protesters over the weekend, including some from California.
I feel like we just have to keep trying.
Once in office, Trump issues a flurry of executive actions.
Could you imagine Biden doing this? I don't think so.
President declaring a national emergency at the southern border. James Gallagher, the top Republican in California Assembly, says that's overdue.
We've seen this. You know, millions of people have come into our country. We have no idea who they are. We know that we have criminals that are committing crimes against our citizens and other immigrants.
A different view from L.A. Congresswoman Sidney Comlager-Dove.
I'm certainly concerned. I think it raises the opportunity for citizen vigilantism and profiling and folks to be considered guilty before they are innocent.
The president ordering troops to the border vows to end birthright citizenship for kids of illegal immigrants. Robert Garcia is a Democratic congressman from Long Beach.
What we don't support is the idea that we're going to go after young people in this country, kids that are in college, that all they know is the United States, and somehow ignore that this is, quite frankly, un-American and illegal.
The nomination is confirmed.
We also visit the U.S. Senate side.
So this is it. This is the office.
This is the office. Yep, yep. Senator Boxer was here, and Kamala Harris, and Senator Butler.
Senator Adam Schiff welcomes us into his new U.S. Senate office.
And I understand this is your first interview you've ever done in this space.
That's right. That's where I do all the firsts with you on The Issue Is.
Congressman, thank you so much for being here for our first show.
Schiff joined us for our first ever show.
Great to make the announcement on your show.
He launched his Senate campaign on our show.
Adam Schiff
did his first Senate debate with us.
And this is the desk.
And is now giving us his first tour after winning the seat once held by Senator Dianne Feinstein.
Is Dianne Feinstein original?
Schiff won his race for that seat the same night his longtime political foe, Donald Trump, won back the presidency.
What does the Trump administration mean specifically for California?
Well, it means that we're going to have to work hard to make sure that we're not in a constant collision with the president, that we protect California's interests and our values, but at the same time, look for opportunities to work together to bring down costs, to build more housing. There's plenty of area to overlap, but a lot will depend on whether the president simply wants to make war in our state.
We've seen this flurry of executive orders, 200 actions in day one. What specifically does that mean for our state? What's the big top lines you're looking at?
I think some of them will have a deep impact depending on whether he really carries them out. The first is these tariffs. If we have these massive tariffs on other countries, that means in terms of a lot of our industries like the agriculture industry, they're going to be just really hard hit. Prices on food and other things are going to go up even more. Similarly, if he carries out mass deportations, it will not only split up a lot of families, you have children separated from the parents, but it means a lot of farm workers won't be on the farm. Food prices will go up even further.
We know you and Trump have gone back and forth for many years. What's it like for you to sit there and watch him be inaugurated?
Well, I'll have to admit, yesterday was rough in many ways to sit in Statuary Hall, to see a president inaugurated who had incited a violent attack on that very building, and then later that day, watch him pardon 1,550 people that were involved in that attack on the Capitol, including something like 170 people who beat police officers and gouged them and bear sprayed them to give them pardons. That was tough, I think, because what it says to other lawbreakers is if you commit violence on his behalf, there's a good chance that you may get off scot-free.
Meanwhile, you also got a pardon from President Biden, one that you didn't ask for. You've come on our show and said that it's not a good idea, don't do this, and yet he did it anyways. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I continue to think that it was unwise and unnecessary and that it sets a bad precedent. I think we can now expect that Donald Trump will pardon his family members on the way out of office. And since he has just come into office, it kind of tells his family members they have carte blanche to do whatever they want, to cross whatever lines they want to cross, because they can expect a pardon on the way out the door. This was my concern, frankly, with the whole preemptive pardon. You know, the origin of all this is the threats, the improper threats by Trump. But nevertheless, I don't think that should have been the response.
Why do you think President Biden didn't listen to you?
Well, I don't know. I never discussed it with him, so I really don't know. I suspect he thinks that the president will make good on his threats. President Trump will make good on his threats, and that regardless of what he might do in the pardon issue, Trump was going to do whatever he would do with his own pardons. I assume that was part of the reasoning.
You know, we've been talking to you for years, and this is something I know you've thought about for years, to be here in the Senate, in this office that Kamala Harris was in, that Barbara Boxer was in this physical office. What's it like for you to physically be here?
Well, it is an awesome responsibility to represent the whole state. It's exciting to be able to try to fight for folks in the far north and the far south to try to tackle new issues like the Salton Sea or the Tijuana River crisis. And now we have this massive heartbreak in these fires that are all my constituents. Mm-hmm. In fact, part of the area, Altadena, I used to represent for decades, and I can't tell you how many people I know personally in both Altadena and the Palisades who have lost everything. So it's also been really heavy, a very heavy responsibility, but I'm very proud and mindful of the history, not just of this physical office, but this is the seat that Dianne Feinstein occupied, and she was such a giant, gives me a big model to follow.
So a little bit of home here in the office, yeah, to level set.
California's senior senator Alex Badea is now in the same physical office Senator Feinstein once occupied.
This was the last thing I would have imagined I'd be doing when I was growing up.
Badea is California's first Latino senator, and he has reminders about his heritage all over the office, including a tribute to Cesar Chavez.
Goes back to the inspiration I got from when I first met Cesar when I was in college. Yes, wow. That's his autograph.
We're seeing a lot of action on immigration so far. Your reaction?
Yeah, it's, he made it clear during the course of the campaign he wanted to be tough, but I wish he'd just be smarter. The net effect of the executive orders that I've seen him thus far are not only to make it impossible for anybody to come to the United States, which, look, I agree, we need a border that is orderly and controlled, but also humane, but also to deport millions of people who have lived here in the United States, most who came lawfully and maybe overstayed a visa, or they came with their parent lawfully, but they've aged out of those protections because the backlogs are so long. That's going to have a real impact. You know, if you want to look at the construction industry, for example, how many immigrants work in that field? As we're trying to rebuild Los Angeles, we're going to have less workers to be able to do so. Costs are going to go up. It's going to take longer. Care about food prices. Who is it that works in the fields and in food processing facilities? Get rid of those workers. Cost of food is going to go up. I thought, Alex, that the takeaway from the November election was people being concerned about inflation and prices.
Trump says,
seem to be opposite.
Trump says that's not what he's going after. He says he's going after the illegal immigrants who had committed other crimes and potentially get rid of felons, take them out of jail. What's wrong with that?
Well, devil's always in the details. If it was just targeting violent offenders, nobody disagrees with that. Democrats agree with that. Mm-hmm. But he'll say that in one speech and then turn right around and promise the largest mass deportation in our nation's history. So how do you reconcile the two? Because the vast majority of immigrants, documented and undocumented, are not violent criminals. So he keeps going back to that rhetoric from his first presidential campaign, mm-hmm, right, of the rapists and the drug dealers and all of that. So I'm hoping for the best, but I got to prepare and prepare California for the worst.
How are you doing that?
Well, working with our state counterparts to make sure that there's an information campaign, at least for immigrants to know their rights, to try to work with not just the state and cities, but through philanthropy to help support maybe legal guidance and even representation through the process, and do what we can here in Washington to push President Trump, push the departments and agencies that are going to be implementing this in that more strategic direction of just focus on violent offenders. Because guess what? If you're targeting, you know, kids stealing bubblegum from a store, that's resources and time and energy that's not being directed, mm-hmm, at the violent offenders. So let's be smart about this.
Before we head out, a moment of fun.
While we can.
There it is.
Go Dodgers.
There it is. Sorry, Washington Giants blue. Fans.
Up next, a different view from conservative commentator Dave Rubin. Here's conservative commentator Dave Rubin running into J.D. Vance ahead of his inauguration as vice president. We sat down with Rubin while in Washington this week and talked about Donald Trump's widespread appeal.
He is now bringing together the widest coalition that I think for guys of a certain age we have ever seen in our political lifetime. The idea that Donald Trump is coming in with Tulsi Gabbard, who literally ran as a Democrat 4 years ago, right? Bobby Kennedy, who ran as a Democrat literally a year ago. Now bringing in Elon Musk, who only was a Democrat his entire life until the last couple of years. And the laundry list goes on and on. And people like me and many others, and Joe Rogan, and this long list of people. It's like there is an opportunity right now to move the margins to the margin where they belong. Take a wide 10. And what does the wide 10 stand for? It stands for America. And what does that mean? Well, maybe having borders and believing in capitalism and believing that the country is fundamentally good, removing some of this woke stuff and neo-racism, and then just getting back to letting people flourish. And I think that that's what this all represents. And so that's why I think the mood of the country is quite good.
So you used to support the Democratic Party. Democratic Party is at a crossroads right now, an inflection point, and seems like they could go left or go more towards the center. Where do you think the party goes, and what would your advice be to the party?
In a normal situation, I think that there should be a healthy tension between Republicans and Democrats, between liberals and conservatives. I think that's good as a pluralistic democracy with over 300 million people. It's good to have the two sides somewhat fighting in the middle. Unfortunately, what's happened with the Democrats is they've gone so all in on some of the more radical left stuff. At the moment, I honestly think the best thing for the country is really the destruction of the Democrat Party. And then maybe a cycle or two down the way, they can get rid of the wokesters and a phoenix can rise out of the ashes. But for now, I just think they've made their choice. They ran the worst candidate possible in Kamala Harris, someone who had none of her own thoughts, but just was a perfect representation of the woke machine, and America soundly rejected it.
Big picture, sort of real concisely, what is your hope for the Trump administration?
Oh, my hope is that they deliver what they've promised. If we fix the border, if we do some deportations, if we get the economy going again, I think it really, maybe more than anything else, I mean, I think those things are granular and can be done, but I think if we project America as a good force for the world again, that we are the world's leader. Someone's got to lead the world. So unless you want it to be China or you want it to be Russia, then it should be America. I really believe we have a chance to have a four-year run that will change the course of the country. And then, well, I saw JD last night. It's like, that guy's got a pretty bright future behind him, in front of him, I should say. And it's like, maybe then there's a 12-year run of this.
Well, let's talk about that. So we saw a picture of you with JD Vance.
Yeah.
What'd you say to him?
I think, if I'm not mistaken, that I was the first podcast that he did when he ran for senator from Ohio, when he was very, he was known from Hillbilly Elegy, but little known in the political world. And that was, it's not that long ago, ironically. It's only about 4 or 5 years ago.
It's crazy,
so the guy's rise is like a full hockey stick. But man, talk about somebody being ready to get into the primetime game and the incredible VP debate he had. I don't want to say what we said privately, other than I wish him a lot of luck, and I think he's ready to do this, and I think he's excited, and you can feel it, and that's where we started.
Did he express gratitude to you?
Did he claim credit
for the whole thing?
I didn't claim the credit, but I did put him on, and then that gave him an opportunity to show people he knew what he was doing.
So it's either all thanks to you or your fault, depending on your perspective.
I guess we'll pick this up in 4 years.
Yeah. Dave Rubin, thank you so much. Always great
to
talk
to you.
Great to see you in person.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Up next, Fox's Brett Baer on how Trump is unlike any politician he's ever covered.
We've never seen anything like this.
During Trump's inauguration, close to 11 million people turned to Fox's Brett Baer, more than twice as many viewers as any other network. We sat down with Brett as he was preparing for that inauguration coverage in Washington.
Listen, I think that he's different now. I've noticed in dealing with him. I think he's more comfortable in his skin. Mm. I think he's been there before, so he knows a lot more about what he wants to do. And more importantly, the people around him have been preparing for 4 years to do what they're doing. So hence, you have all of these things that'll be laid out in the first hours.
You've spent a lot of time with him on camera. You've spent a lot of time with him off camera. What's he like off camera. What's the behind the scenes Donald Trump like?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that know him off camera. I've played golf with him a few times, and I think he's very funny, first of all. And I think that most people, Democrats even, when they're in a room with him, know that he works the room and kind of can ask people questions, make them feel like they're the center of the universe in that moment. So he's really good at working a room and talking to people. Now, when he gets something in his mind, he's pretty determined and can say things that everybody goes, wait, why did he say that?
And, you know, he talks a lot about fake news, but he also consumes more news than just about anybody, right?
He does.
I mean, you think about that sometimes, that the president's watching?
Of course, yeah. Sometimes we talk to him directly. You know, Mr. President, if you'd like to weigh in, please, you know, shoot us a line.
Yeah, and you hear from him sometimes,
sure,
too, right?
Of course, yeah. He, with a lot of people, not just Fox, with ABC, there's all kinds of reporters that get phone calls just to check in. And I think, listen, for me, that's very helpful. Off-the-record conversations about where his head is, I think, help inform our voters. And, you know, we'll continue to ask tough but fair questions. I've got, you know, some interview requests coming that I think will come around. And hopefully it'll lay out a picture of where he sees the vision for the country.
When we think of this moment, you are the number one anchor on the number one network. How do you think about that responsibility, and why do you think that Fox News has become the destination for so many people?
Well, first of all, it's an honor. It's always been an honor to sit in a seat where people were paying attention to political or world news. And that's what I love to do. You love to do it,
yeah,
too. It's an honor when you're sitting in these big moments. So that's how I look at it, number one. Number two, I think Fox has been honest with our news coverage. You know, we've covered both sides. We've given Democrats and independents and Republicans a voice to be heard. And it wasn't one-sided. So I think over time, that coverage has built a trust. And we take that very seriously. So obviously we have an opinion side that's really forceful and good at what they do. And yes, we have a news side. So we're really, we've had a team that's worked together for a long time, and I think it clicks.
I mean, how do you think about that responsibility of, as the country is witnessing history, millions of them are seeing it in effect through your eyes?
Yeah, well, it's a big responsibility. And you know, I write books about presidential biographies, and I've written a number of presidents and looked back at how they've affected different moments in time. And so what I'm doing anchoring is real-time reporting on history.
Clearly you're doing a great job. That's why you're number one.
Thanks for being so kind to us.
You bet.
Really appreciate it, Brett.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
A final word to wrap things up after this.
Thanks so much for watching this special edition of The Issue Is. I'm Alex Michelson, reporting from Washington. A big shout out to our photographer, Tony Butita, who put in 18 to 20 hour days on this trip, and our editor back home, Debbie Kim, the MVP of our team. Love you both. Love you for watching. See you next week back home.